Hello and welcome to another episode of Top of the Ops, brought to you by the Drawdown's editorial team. My name is John Whittaker. I'm the editor of the Drawdown, and joining me today, as usual, are the Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire of PE Operations Journalism, Sylvia Sicardi and Matthias Plotz. Hello, guys.
Hi, John.
Hello, everyone. Always good to be here.
We're recording this just after our annual tech conference, which we organise together with Real Deals. Sylvia, you were there live reporting from the event, doing some videos. Any highlights you want to share?
Yes, it was a great day. I had my camera crew at the ready, got some nice interviews with some of the attendees in the afternoon. I did manage to catch some of the content in the morning as well. Surprise, surprise. One of the hottest topics was how to integrate AI successfully. I would say there was a particular buzz around how Microsoft Copilot is being integrated into internal systems. And people are saying that some of the positive use cases are that it transcribes things very well. But when you try and make it do specific technical tasks, it's becoming a bit more challenging to integrate.
Yeah. And I think the parts that I found most interesting is when there were some presentations that tried to look underneath the bonnet of some of the SaaS companies and challenge some of their claims about what they're doing to change the market. Obviously, things are changing very quickly, but there's still a lot of hype out there, right? Any technological news from your end, Matthias?
Well, John, the shift keys on my keyboard stopped working and I haven't been able to turn them back on again. So I don't really feel confident at the moment to tackle any tech topic.
Yeah, that's fair enough and very unfortunate. If there's any tech savvy listeners in our audience, please reach out to Matthias to try and help him with his keyboard. But we're not here today to discuss tech, guys. We're here today to discuss Matthias's cover story for the March issue of The Drawdown, which observed a third party entering the fund finance marketplace. Matthias, can you please explain to us who this third party is and what their appearance means for market dynamics?
Absolutely. So this third party we're referring to are credit rating agencies. KBRA has been active in the fund finance space since, I think, 2016-17, and they're the most long-standing player. But last year in particular, we saw Fitch, Moody's, and S&P appear on the scene as well. There's a variety of reasons for their entrance. A strong driver is legislation in adjacent industries, namely Basel 3.1 for banks, and the Solvency II legislation for insurance. But there's also just a stronger demand overall for capital call and NAV facilities. Without going too much into detail, the credit rating agencies kind of allow you to navigate the requirements of these legislation pieces a lot smoother and sometimes also cheaper.
Okay, gotcha. How's all of this being perceived by the industry? Credit ratings are quite expensive, right? And I imagine the process of obtaining them can be quite intrusive.
You always have this when a new entity gets introduced to an already existing and running system. There is an amount of skepsis from everyone who's already part of the party. So some people I spoke to, they question how well-placed rating agencies are to actually properly assess a fund's investor base. They point especially to sort of the deep and long-standing relationships that banks will already have with these investors as lenders, and there's kind of a question around whether agencies can meaningfully assess the risks of a fund's investor base. Generally, there are some concerns they see about the methodologies, which sometimes can appear sort of to result in ratings which are rather the cause of a technicality and less so of an actually undertaken in-depth process.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Another thing that I've been finding with how rating agencies are getting more involved in fund finance is related to the increased issuance of something called collateralized fund obligations. So I'm currently writing something on how we call them CFOs, so no, not you listeners, but how they're potentially a great way for different types of LPs, like insurance companies, to access private markets. And similarly, credit funds can tap into some additional liquidity by transferring existing LP interests into the CFO structure, meanwhile releasing some cash to make further investments. But what I found interesting is that where rating agencies are not essential for NAB deals or sublines, they are for CFO transactions because of the increased level of risk involved.
I can't wait for your piece to come out and me finally understanding what CLOs are. But I think in all of this, it's important not to forget that fundamentally credit rating agencies aren't here to allow the industry to operate more efficiently. Their mandate is more to act as a safeguard against yet another financial crisis. And while the cover feature focused mainly on the impacts for the industry, I afterwards also caught up with Gopal Nasiamurthy from KBRA to talk about how they see more competitors coming into the fund marketplace and how this will affect these dynamics.
Well, welcome everyone. My name is Matthias. I'm a reporter at The Drawdown, and I'm here today to talk about credit rating agencies in the fund finance space with Gopal Nasiamurthy, I hope I pronounced that right, from the credit rating agency KBRA. How are you doing, Gopal?
I'm doing well, Matthias. Thank you very much for having me, and you were spot on with the pronunciation. That was great.
Fantastic. Thank you. So what we're going to do is this podcast runs alongside the larger cover feature that I wrote a while ago. But I'm catching up with experts from the industry to kind of go more in depth around some of the themes that have emerged. So let's jump right in. The first thing I would like to know from your perspective as working at a credit rating agency, how do you see the influx of more agencies entering the fund finance space affecting the dynamics of the fund finance industry?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Look, I'd say first and foremost, KBRA has been actively involved across fund finance markets now for more than 6 years, 7 years actually at this point. And so the presence, especially in more recent months and years of other rating agencies entering the space in greater scale, really I think is a testament to the growth and the viability of the industry, both in terms of how we've seen private markets grow, the diversification of product offerings, investment strategies, structures, and so forth. And we've always, you know, held the belief that private markets, and in particular the use cases of fund finance when used responsibly, are financial products that carry strong credit quality in large part. And so I think we frankly welcome our competitors' attempts to enter the industry. We think it's validating in many ways to the beliefs that we've long held. And I think in particular, and I don't think this is any secret, some of our peers in the space had previously published research and anecdotes that frankly were, I think, misinformed. And so as you enter the industry more directly, you know, some of the uncertainties becoming a little bit more unveiled, I think some of that skepticism hopefully will be reduced and vanish over time. It's certainly something that we've held a belief for, given our activity in the space over the last few years.
Yeah, it certainly puts a way of legitimization on, I think, the practice, which, given how widespread it is, and as you said, if conducted properly, can be a very powerful and useful tool, is certainly a good thing. How do you see kind of the increasing involvement of credit rating agencies affecting the provision of NAV lines and capital call lines, respectively?
Yeah, look, I think the use case for ratings, right? Ratings effectively do two things, right? From our understanding of the use cases in the market, at least where KBRA has been involved. One is it expands the investable universe, right? So certain types of investors globally are able to participate either outright or in greater capacity when owning a debt instrument that carries a credit rating, ideally an investment grade credit rating, right? That's one. And second, it's also a third party validation source for individuals holding positions. Think banks that are highly regulated with capital charge considerations. When they hold an instrument that carries a rating from a regulated entity like ourselves, whether it's in the US or in Europe or elsewhere, right? There's a validation and potentially some benefit that comes with that, as long as their internal risk models align with those ratings as well. And so I think the growth in private markets from what we've seen have caused a need and a demand for greater capacity across fund finance. And so the ability to use ratings to expand that universe of potential investors who can participate has been a meaningful positive. In NAV lines in particular, right, we've seen banks increase their ability to lend and originate NAV loans, both NAV loans against credit instruments, which have long been sort of a bank-originated product, as well as recently NAV loans backed by equity interests, either outright private equity interests or, you know, NAV loans to secondaries funds as another example. And banks now have been able to distribute or syndicate some of that risk to non-bank lenders like insurance companies, which has allowed them to participate in greater scale, lend in greater capacity. But equally, I think some of the other positives in sort of our view as a rating agency is sort of alignment of structuring, right? And so when a debt instrument like a NAV loan carries a credit rating, one of the areas of significant focus for us is around the structure, the method of repayment, the financial protections and provisions in those documents and structures that ensure that even under scenarios consistent with pretty meaningful underperformance, that loan will get repaid in full along with any interest due and payable to lenders as well. And so when ratings are introduced into these structures, I think there's a tightening of provisions that are protective to lenders. And perhaps, you know, in my mind, that's also a positive that we may see as well, given ratings reflect all of those risks, among many others.
I think there's a really good point around what one phrase that I keep hearing over and over, especially in conversations sort of with regulatory bodies, and, you know, I sit in Brussels and quite close to a couple of them, is around the transformative power of private capital. But in order to kind of transform industries, and I think that's especially around the sustainability conversation, you actually need to have that capital and you need to have enough of it, while simultaneously you need to have the safeguards in place to prevent any misdealings or prevent yet another great financial crisis. And it sounds like the credit ratings act as a safeguard to pull more capital into the industry, but at the same time do so sensibly and with sort of everyone being aware of the risks and being able to manage them.
I think that's a great point. So at its core, a rating is a very simple thing, right? A credit rating speaks to the ability for a borrower to fulfill its debt service obligations, both the ability to pay due and payable interest and principal on or by a stated maturity date, right? So very simple concept, but in order to ascribe and assign a rating and maintain that rating over time, there are a number of considerations. And to the point that you just outlined, alignment of interests is certainly one of them, right? So what we want to make sure, a key consideration for us is use of proceeds, right? So what are the motivations, right? What is the long-term alignment between the borrower in consideration of the leverage that they're now putting in place and the lenders that are providing that leverage on the assumption that they'll get that money back along with interest to ensure that that sort of alignment of interest is maintained over time, right? And so that's where we think about who an asset manager is, what their historical track record has been, what their ability to deploy, realize, and outperform has been over the course of multiple economic cycles. And so, again, as we think about what a rating means, there's a sense of ordinality that comes with it. And so for investors who want to increase their participation across fund finance markets, a rating is a good indicator, aside from the regulatory capital benefits that might come with it, a good indicator on a very ordinal way of what the risk might be from one transaction to another, right? So there's a bit of a theory here, but an investment grade rating is an investment grade rating, and in theory should be able to absorb comparable risks one transaction to another. There's always going to be some idiosyncrasies, no doubt, but some of the validation that comes with the rating certainly, hopefully, is indicative to investors in terms of not just the fundamental credit risk, but the long-term sustainability that comes alongside that.
We're going to pick you up on one word you said in the beginning, and that is simple, because one individual I quoted in my article kind of decried the process of obtaining a credit rating as, and I quote, a total nightmare. Is there anything that borrowers and lenders should keep in mind when they want to obtain a credit rating?
Yeah, look, that's always an unfortunate thing to hear, right? My hope is that individual who said that worked with one of our competitors. Client service at its core is incredibly important to us at KBRA. We believe highly in ensuring that we are responsive to clients, adequately considering risk, and hearing individuals out to make sure we have a fulsome understanding of an investment strategy, particularly when we're thinking about the funds group here. That being said, right, there's also an incredibly important thing that we do, right, which is setting standards as to rateability, setting standards as it relates to the comprehensiveness of legal documents. And I think in this market in private capital, that's increasingly becoming more and more institutionalized, right, particularly as it relates to lending. Some of the rigidity that's really important for us as we think about what a rating means, particularly thresholds of investment grade risk, can oftentimes and understandably be areas and points of frustration for clients as well, right? Because there are ultimately standards that we need to see, right? There's certainly an understanding of how things are expected to be managed, but those also have to be documented and formalized in the context of what's permitted, right? And so perhaps, right, some frustration for newer entrants into the market, newer users of ratings could be under some of those points. But eyes wide open, I think that is a reality that folks need to be aware of. As this industry becomes more and more institutionalized, some of the first movers in that space may face more points of frustration and more legwork, right, to ultimately get to a market that's a bit more standardized, right? So in a way, right, it's certainly unfortunate to hear that there can be challenging experiences, but in a way, it's also validating, right, to ensure that we set standards and we draw the lines appropriately as a rating agency to ensure that we're adequately assessing risk and adequately applying rigidity and minimum standards universally across the board.
I think that is a very sensible approach to it, given that essentially what the function of a credit rating agency at the core is, and that you need to have robust methodologies in place to carry them out. I'm sure it can be quite a headache to then actually work through them, but the point of them is, to a certain extent, safeguarding. The point is not necessarily to smooth up the process, although I'm sure our listeners would love if it would be smooth.
But look, it's not a rubber stamping process, right? There is an intensive analysis that we do on, again, speaking to the world of funds, but I think I could speak for KBRA more broadly across the board, starting with what are the assets, what's ultimately the credit risk that drives a transaction, and stepping back at each layer to make sure we have a really fulsome understanding of all the contributing factors that could drive credit risk at the end of the day, right? And so we're not doing our job, right? If there are times where we're disagreeing with clients, right? Or we're disagreeing philosophically on a view of risk, or we're disagreeing on the degree of clarity that might be required in a legal document, it's important that we do that and we set standards across the board. But at the same time, balance that with recognizing that we're a service provider in capital markets, right? Where equally to the consistency of our methodological approach, we must also be responsive and clear and making sure we're efficient in how we work to ultimately service capital markets in a way that's useful.
That sounds like a very fine line. I'm glad I do not have to walk, but this has been very insightful and a great ending point. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, Gopal.
Thank you for having me. Really, it was a pleasure to speak with you. And it's an exciting time, certainly in private capital and in fund finance. So really appreciate the active reach out.
Interesting views from Gopal there. And it's certainly a challenge to walk that fine line of being a service provider, but not necessarily having an improved industry process as the core of your sales pitch. I guess you don't want to come across as the seller of speed cameras. Perhaps necessary given the regulations, but not everyone's best friend.
Exactly. And I think while all of this is obviously well-intentioned, the jury is still out on what the consequences of this will be overall. For example, fundraising is already tough, and in the overall challenging liquidity environment, smaller managers might not be able to afford a credit rating or to obtain a loan. But I think generally, rating agencies coming into the space is a symptom of how fund finance and PE as a wider industry have matured. However, at the same time, it's also creating a glass ceiling between the mid-market and sort of the higher cap firms, talking again about how expensive it is to obtain a rating and possibly therefore failing at getting a loan. And that glass ceiling, I think, is only going to get harder and more challenging to break through.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see if mid-market credit funds or even fund of funds start to develop relationships with rating agencies in order to create more complex facilities that are attractive to insurance companies or pension funds who need consistent, stable returns from a diverse pool of assets.
I think that theme of the mid-market being squeezed is right through your piece, Matthias, and keeps up coming up in various topics that we're covering at the moment. So it seems like we finally have an answer to the question, who was the third party? But the story is far from over. We'll continue to follow it closely. But this episode of Top of the Ops is drawing to a close. Before we close out the episode, Cyril and Matthias, can you just give us a little update on things that you're working on?
Sure. So other than my CFO piece, I'm buzzing full of ideas about AI, my cover feature, and that's going to be coming out in May. Before that, I've also got some ESG pieces coming out related to the interoperability of disclosure regimes. I've spoken to a Spanish impact fund on how they develop their own Article 9 reporting tool, which is in line with their own academic research. And I've also spoken to an early adopter of the voluntary TNFD regime to find out their motivations behind signing up.
And I'm still not done with fund finance, at least for now. I'm looking at ESG KPIs in NAV loans because I wanted to find out how they are defined and how they're set up. But it's turned a bit into a different story where they don't seem to be used much anymore. And the consequences of that and how you can use them, you can find out when the piece is out. Other than that, I have an interview coming up with Golden Capital Partners COO, which is going to be all about digitalization because she's very passionate about it and should be incredibly interesting. And another one is with Jonathan Blake, who has many titles that allude to him being the father of the LP regime and also a very influential figure in the VC space. And I'm really interested in catching up with him and getting his thoughts on all things fund formation and PE trends.
Thanks, guys. Fascinating stories, which I'm sure will turn into fascinating articles when they come out. Keep your eyes out for them on the website. In the next episode of Top of the Ops, we'll be asking whether the talent train for private equity is facing severe service disruptions and what GPs can do beyond extending the distribution of carry within their firms to ensure the brightest of the next generation become future leaders of the industry. Look out for that podcast and the accompanying article coming soon on The Drawdown. Thank you, as always, to Sylvia and Matthias for joining me today. And thank you to everyone for listening. See you next time.